Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Today on Marvel Movie News, we check in with some news on New Mutants, Black Widow, some Endgame, get some Blu-ray. Beautiful. But most of all, we are going to tackle the topic, what is the most rewatchable film in the MCU? Get heated, because this debate's gonna get fiery today on Marvel Movie News.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Marvel Movie News.
Oh, good afternoon to you, our merry Marvelites, and welcome back to Marvel Movie News. I'm really excited to get into today's episode. This is going to be a fun one. We got some fun, interesting topics. Not a ton of news, which is why we're going to have some fun. But, like, it's the calm before the storm, you guys.
I know.
Because D23 is coming up, and the end of the year, it's like we'll get some cool TV shows coming up. But then it's the next 2 years where it's going to be like, oh, you thought it was slow? Did we hear you guys say it was slow Marvel Movie News Day? And then it's like, boom, movie, boom, TV show, boom, movie, boom, animated show, movie, TV show, animated show. Anyway.
So someone's excited
guys.
For that.
Welcome to the show. We are coming to you live from the battlefield at Avengers HQ, because I can't stop watching that sequence in Avengers Endgame.
Nice.
I hope you guys all have picked up your Blu-ray, whether you've watched it or not, whether you've watched it and the commentary and all the special features. We're going to talk a little bit about that Blu-ray today, as well as all the stuff. And we're going to get into, after we do some movie news, what is the most rewatchable MCU movie of all time? I'm Zach Wilson. Zia Anderson's here.
Hello, hello.
Christian Blatt's right next to her.
I sure am.
So I picked up the Blu-ray on Tuesday when it came out. You guys are still waiting for yours to show up, right?
I get mine either today or tomorrow.
Nice.
In the mail.
Christian, you're an old school physical media guy like me.
I will be getting physical media, and it's basically going to be, when do I have the time to watch all of it? I'm going to buy it that day.
Fair enough. That's fair. I don't think you'll really struggle to find it in stores.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you were to maybe go to 7-Eleven after midnight for some reason. But other than that, you'll probably find it. It's a little inside joke. Ryan in the booth drove around looking at 7-Eleven for it the other night.
Got a chance to dig through the Blu-ray. A lot of it's pretty much the same as what you'll get on the digital. Like, that's the cool thing now, is if you do buy it digitally, you're getting the same, if not more, special features than you get on the physical disc. But you don't have to rely on internet connection when you have physical media.
Exactly.
However, I did want to do a quick PSA for anybody like who's like me and went out and bought the 4K Ultra HD version of the disc and then popped the Blu-ray in, because a lot of like game systems don't have 4K Blu-ray yet. If you pick this up and then you popped in the Blu-ray and you're like, where are all the special features?
Yeah.
This is what I spent a lot of Tuesday night doing, is like flipping through menus, being like, the special features aren't here. Is there like a secret access code? Do I have to go back in time and find like a bunch of Infinity Stones to unlock the special feature? What's going on? open it up. And then you see two discs. You see the Blu-ray and you see the 4K. The 4K one does not have the special features on it. You're wondering, where the hell are those features? Pop out the 4K disc and it's hiding underneath on a second Blu-ray.
That's sneaky.
It's sneaky and they don't tell you anywhere that it's going to happen. It took me a little while to figure it out. So save yourself some embarrassing time.
Well, you did it so we don't have to.
Yeah,
now we know.
Yeah. I embarrass myself so you don't have to, listeners. But yeah, I enjoyed all the deleted scenes. And you guys talked about them while I was away.
I haven't gotten to actually watch them yet.
The deleted scenes are fun. One complaint that I have about this disc is that they clearly have not given us everything on Endgame.
Excuse me.
The Hulk scene that was with the second release not on this disc.
What?
The scene with Hulk and like saving the day, like smart, it's not on here. And I'm not sure why.
Not that was like an amazing scene or anything. Going back to the theaters for it, I was like, all right, cool.
But like, you get Reginald Val Johnson.
Yeah,
you get a nice little Die Hard. It's just surprising that they would put something in theaters that they didn't put. And they didn't sell that as a point. Like, this isn't going to be on the Blu-ray. Now I feel like I think you can find it on YouTube. Like, they posted it on YouTube, so it is available. But it was a strange call to put something in theaters and not put it on the Blu-ray.
So what's coming out in the future that'll have everything on
a giant Infinity Gauntlet with 23 movies in it.
Exactly.
The only reason I think that we may actually never get that is that I think it's probably too complicated with Sony.
Yeah.
That's why you have not gotten any announcements of a Phase 3 box set the way that you had the briefcase from Phase 1 and the orb from Phase 2, where you had like the entire phase in one $250 collection. And with a cool little physical Tesseract in it. I don't think we may never get that for Phase 3 because Sony.
What am I here for?
This is one of those this movie distribution things is Sony is going to have their own distribution arm and Disney has their own distribution arm and they would have to make a deal between the two of them for percentages and everything if they were to package those movies together. It's a complicated thing to do.
They can figure it out. They all have crazy lawyers they pay stupid money to. Come on, guys. Get it together.
It may just be enough that it changes the setup.
Ah, blah.
But please, work it out. I want my giant Infinity Gauntlet full of DVDs.
Yeah, me too.
He's willing to give you the money. Let him.
The $800 that it will cost.
And you guys can split it 30-70 or however you want to do it. Figure it out. Jeez.
Well, let's do the math here. If the average Blu-ray right now, those cost $29 for Marvel Blu-rays, or $25 for the Blu-rays, $29 for the... So let's say $25 for the sake of argument, times 23, you're looking at minimum $575.
And that's without the cool gauntlet case.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and so you're want it just for that.
You're talking about probably $600-$700, if not $800, for that box set.
I'll do it.
I still want
it. Start saving now.
You know I want it, Disney. I know chat wants it. You guys tell us if you would buy it. Would you spend $800 on an Infinity Gauntlet complete Infinity Saga set?
Filled with movies you already owned, by the
filled
way.
Filled with, yes.
Yeah. So that's the important part of the question, you know, because if you're waiting for that, then, you know, good for you with that level of restraint. But let us know in the chat, and I will let you know when anybody responds.
But speaking of Disney and movies and distribution complications, let's talk a little bit about New Mutants.
Oh, New Mutants.
So the news this week, there's more like rumors and leaks about New Mutants. And apparently Disney is not liking what they're seeing from New Mutants. Shocker, based on everything we've heard so far.
But I'm curious, does that have to do with the fact that it's taking more of a horror stance? It's a horror movie, basically. And if they don't like that aspect of it, or is it just they're like, this is just a terrible movie, the reshoots are not going well. I'm assuming that's what they're doing now, is reshoots.
I don't know if reshoots have started yet.
Well, then you can't say anything.
But they're close.
They already knew it was bad.
But they don't like what they've scene of it now. Now they own it. They can watch it. They can, like, they see the drafts of for the reshoots, stuff like that. And that's the, it's all rumor, too. This could all be wrong, to be fair. It's just the internet. Somebody leaked this out on the internet.
Right. I mean, if you were thinking of doing, like, all right, so what we're told is that it needs 20 minutes worth of reshoots. And then you see the movie and you go, like, no, it needs, like, an hour and 15 minutes worth of reshoots.
Well, it's like, is it a page one rewrite? Right, Are they that unhappy with it? As far as horror, I don't think they're gonna balk at that, as long as it's not overly violent horror. Yeah. Like, and I don't think it ever was. I don't think it was ever gonna be Saw.
It was more tonal.
Yeah, I mean they said they're doing a horror movie. They've called Doctor Strange 2 a horror movie. Mm-hmm. So Disney's open to horror in with their movies, and even with Marvel movies. So I don't know that they're balking at that, but whatever it is, they're not happy, and it's, of course, continuing the doubt of, will we ever see this movie? Do you guys think that this movie will ever see the big screen?
I hope so. I would like that, but I guess that depends on whether or not that they think it has enough potential to want to put all that money and work into basically redoing it. If they don't like it that much, again, it's all rumors. But I would like to see it personally. I would like to see it on the big screen, so I hope so.
I think that we will see it one way or the other. If they do no more reshoots because they feel like it's a lost cause, it'll turn up somewhere. Whether it's, you know, Hulu, or they actually, like, shop it around and try to sell it to somebody, I think that you'll see it somewhere. And in terms of the big screen, maybe they do it for streaming, but they do one of those, like, one-night event sort of screenings where you can only see it on that one night. You know, I think that that might be a business model to work around. But again, it is just rumors, and maybe they know exactly how to make it at least better, you know? I mean, I liked Dark Phoenix, and I know a lot of people didn't, but they put that out, didn't they? It was a little too far along to not put out.
You can't put out a finished movie with an established release date. Like, you've already booked the theaters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, with New Mutants, they moved it several times. It never got as close as it was by the time the merger happened.
Dark Phoenix was probably finished or almost finished by the time it got to Disney's hands. No, New Mutants is like actively needing to do reshoots, extensive reshoots from everything we've heard.
Yeah.
So, as we said, it's about the same conversation we keep having. I expect we'll see it on Hulu someday in whatever form it takes. I still don't think we're going to get it in theaters.
David Tapia in the chat says Disney doesn't want to lose more money after Dark Phoenix, so they will not spend for more reshoots. And I think that's entirely possible. Yeah. Like we're saying, if it's going to cost too much, they'll be like, no, just dump it on Hulu, forget it. You know, let's not even try. But, you know, I mean, like, they have it in March, and that is not a particularly competitive time. I don't know what's supposed to come out that weekend at this point, but you got to figure it at least has a chance if it's decent. And, you know, maybe you even play up the horror, you know, maybe that's what you do in reshoots, is that you make it not like Saw or Hostel or one of those things, but you kind of play up the suspense aspect for it. And then maybe people who don't even care about superhero movies want to see it. You know, maybe you target that audience.
Yeah.
There's a big audience there.
What is it? I think it's due for April. Now, just to be clear, I think it's April 3rd, September, right? 2020. It was supposed to be this month.
Yeah.
It was supposed to have come out. Also, before that, it was supposed to have come out in February.
Yes. Yeah. It was February, then it was August, like right now, and then it was, and now it's April 3rd, 2020 is the current date that is set.
It's not that long.
For the release. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Maybe they're further along if it's done. We'll see. We don't really know for sure. Anyway, moving on from this topic, we could just talk in circles about New Mutants, and we're never going to know. But let's portal over to back to Endgame, because I thought this was an interesting story. I know, Christian, you said you had some opinions on this. Slott commented this week after rewatching Endgame once it got to the home release. Dan Slott, if you're not familiar with him, was the head writer of The Amazing Spider-Man for, I want to say, 300 issues?
Yeah, it's like 14 years or something.
Some extreme amount of time. He only left the book recently at issue 800.
Right.
He's responsible for the Superior Spider-Man run, where Doc Ock took over Peter Parker's body, which is one of, like, my favorite runs. It was just, I thought it was a fascinating twist.
He did that in the cartoons.
Oh, they did. Yeah, yeah. That's currently
the current
cliffhanger for Disney's Spider-Man, which it's been off the air for like a year. But when it comes back, they're going to pick up that story. Yeah, Dan Slott's a consultant on that, and I think that helps the tone.
Dan Slott also he's responsible for Spider-Verse as a thing. Like he came up with the original Spider-Verse concept,
right?
Or at least he wrote the original version of it, and so like that's his baby is Spider-Verse. But what he said this week is that he loves Endgame, but he doesn't like one moment in it, and it's the instant kill moment where Peter is in the midst of the battle trying to run with the Iron Gauntlet.
Mm-hmm. He's got his suit on.
And he is gonna get pummeled by all the war dogs, and he activates instant kill mode to kill all of the beasts, the soldiers around him. And he doesn't think that Peter Parker would do that because Peter Parker doesn't kill.
Yeah, but he's not usually in a situation where he has to kill. What do you want him to do? Joke his way out of it? Have some quips?
Yeah, that's a bit rough considering that they're like literal beasts attacking him.
It's an interesting debate. I went through some of the comments on this tweet that he put out, and it gets really interesting where it is sort of a question of, where do you draw that line? Like the war dogs are theoretically mindless, but mm-hmm. Peter Parker also didn't want to kill the literal mindless ones, like it when he fought them in the comics. So, I just thought it was funny when you call them mindless, and somebody pointed out,
yeah,
he literally defends mindless ones in the comics. But it's an interesting debate topic. I feel like at that point you kind of have to, like, realistically, it's his only way out.
Yeah,
do what you got to do.
I guess what Dan Slott is saying is more like maybe it made sense in that moment, but he would have felt worse afterwards. Like we didn't see any of the reaction to that in Far From Home.
Now that's valid. I think seeing him be like, "Yeah, I can't believe I killed that many, whatever, that many beasts or whatever." I think that is a valid point. That is very consistent with Peter Parker. If he felt bad, no matter how much somebody deserved it, you know, I mean. The Norman Osborn was trying to kill him, and Spidey jumps out of the way, and the Green Goblin's glider flies right into him, and he still feels bad about that, you know, because it's like, oh, if only I hadn't jumped out of the way, I would have gotten killed. So he always has remorse. So I could see, but I also there certainly was no time for that in Endgame, and as we've seen the headlines, I think that the screenwriters for Far From Home didn't get a chance to read the script for Endgame ahead of that, so that might be a little bit of a
That's
disconnect.
That's a fair point. Yeah. That's fair. They wouldn't have known about that moment, necessarily.
And also, I think maybe he's more sidetracked by the fact that Tony just died, and that he's got all this other stuff going on. So maybe he would have felt it, but it would have been, I don't know, less amplified because of everything else that was happening.
Yeah. I think it'd be more egregious if he'd killed any kind of humanoid person.
Yes, that might have been different.
You know, an alien, anything like that. But it's a valid point. But, you know, we could debate some of the questionable decisions Dan Slott made in those 300 issues. But, you know, this isn't really the show for that.
It is absolutely the show for that, but we don't have time today.
That's what I mean. but you might see that as an upcoming topic.
This isn't the episode for that, we should say. But let's move on. Some other cool news on the podcast front. You guys know I'm a big fan of the Wolverine ongoing podcast. I'm waiting to binge season 2 because I really enjoyed listening to it as one complete drama as opposed to weekly. But they just announced the next podcast that's going to come out from Stitcher and Marvel, and it's going to be an adaptation of the Marvels storyline, which is the photographer angle looking at a big battle above New York, but it's the little human side of the story.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's a very beautiful comic. I recommend checking it out. You can read it all kinds of different places. It's in print pretty much. If you go to Barnes & Noble, you can find it. By the way, buy two, get one free on graphic novels at Barnes & Noble. not an ad, just a heads up.
That's a public service as well.
So what the storyline is going to follow, it's going to follow a photographer I put this name down because I was going to forget it. Where did I put the name? Where did I put it? I didn't put it in a convenient enough place. but it's going to follow a press photographer following the events after Galactus attacks.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a from-the-ground look at the drama from Big Superhero Battle.
Phil Sheldon?
Yes, it is. Thank you for that.
Ryan, the number one Phil Sheldon fan in the world, so thank you.
He immediately knew.
But it's going to have a really interesting cast as well. Method Man is going to be voicing in this.
Nice.
That's great.
That's awesome.
Ethan Peck from Star Trek Discovery.
Oh, he's Spock in season two of Discovery. He was great. I don't know what else he's ever done, but he was fantastic.
I was going to say Star Trek. I just immediately look at you.
Well, yeah, for the answer. I'll tell you whether or not it's good. Yeah.
Yeah. So Method Man. Here's the funny part. He is going to be playing Ben Urich.
Love Ben Urich.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
That is the most disappointing thing about the Netflix universe, that they decided to kill Ben Urich so early. Yeah, so early too. You know.
Yeah.
But anyway,
he was great.
So that's great.
Ethan Peck is going to be playing Mr. Fantastic.
Oh, wow. That's good casting.
Amongst a bunch of other people, this is going to be a cool story. We'll see. Well, I look forward to it. It's going to have Peter Parker. It's going to have all the Fantastic Four because it's Galactus. You have to do that. So look forward to that coming soon.
Yeah. So if you've ever wanted a collaboration between Method Man and Spock, you're going to get it. So it's going to be a good day.
I think we should get into our big topic for the show.
Can I actually get one question from the comments from the chat? So, Zeno, back to what we were talking about before this. Talking about Dan Slott's comments about the instant kill. One, these are both from Zeno Hour. One, Peter Parker doesn't exist. Two, people need to lighten up on this, quote, no superhero should kill mantra, especially in live-action movies. And on the same note, I want to make sure I don't lose it. Thunder God, Cairo 770, you can't compare empathy for a human to that of a bloodthirsty alien drone.
I saw that.
I'm inclined to agree with that. And, I mean, I think that in general superheroes shouldn't kill, but I think there are certainly exceptions where sometimes there's no alternative, you know. But I think we agreed that the idea would be the impact it had on Peter once he did it.
Yeah. So. And even if it wasn't something he could decide, like, I understand why I had to do it. I can move forward with my life. But I feel like that's a thing he brings up in therapy. He's like, I killed all those dogs. Also, they're dogs, you guys.
Also,
even if they're bloodthirsty.
Also, from
in other countries, they eat dogs.
Also, from Zeno Hour, he puts whispers, Iron Man killed people in Iron Man 1 and Iron Man 3.
Yeah, but Iron Man doesn't have that same mantra that Peter Parker has. Like, that's the thing. Peter Parker is very much built around that. Yeah. It's a part of his character. Most of these heroes don't try to kill other people. Yeah. They try to avoid it when possible, but they're more willing to when it comes down to it. It is an ongoing thing for Peter Parker that he is very resistant to anything that would lead to a sentient being's death. It's a point of pride for the character. Correct. And that's why this debate comes up. It's similar with Batman. You have that same debate, and like you can debate endlessly about the realism of that for somebody who's fighting deadly crime, and that's a big part, especially in the Batman storyline. But it becomes a thing for Peter. It's also a thing Dan Slott goes into significantly in Superior Spider-Man when Doc Ock and Peter Parker is like, well, no, we're going to finish this because it's going to be more effective. It becomes a debate. Anyway, I think let's change the topic.
Believe me.
Into our big question for today. What is the most rewatchable MCU film? Now, this is going to be obviously very personal, very opinionated, but I want you guys in the chat to get in on this discussion because there's no one right answer except mine.
And remember, these are MCU movies, so all of you who want to say fan-fortastic, I'm sorry, it's not appropriate. You're not able to say that. It has to be an MCU movie.
That maybe that one is, just not yet. No.
It's never going
to
be.
No. So I wanted to pose this question because obviously we're all rewatching Endgame soon. Like you guys at home, like I already rewatched this week. I enjoyed watching it again. Now I can watch it as many times as I want from the comfort of my couch or my bed, just like sit in bed, just like, yeah, we can rewatch that entire battle scene, go back. So Zia, I want to start with you. What do you think is the give me a couple of your choices. What do you think are the most rewatchable MCU films? And we're gonna each give it around, and then we're gonna start to dial it in.
Okay. Well, immediately what came to mind for me was Civil War and Winter Soldier. I can go back and watch those anytime because to me they're just my favorites by far.
Those are also both popping up in the chat by a bunch of people
because
already.
They're just so good. I can easily go back and watch those. And then Zach, I know that this was one of yours, but it's.
No, please.
The Ragnarok.
Ragnarok is up there.
It was so good.
Well, Christian, what do you think?
I know for me, it's a little bit of an outlier, is First Avenger, because it's my favorite MCU movie, just because, it's the one that I think I don't sit there and, like, try and pick it apart in any way. And I love, I love most of them. I almost said I love all of them. I love most of these movies. But that is just, it's fun because it's a war movie, and then it also has the superhero element, and it's just fun and it's funny. And just, you know, from his origin all the way through to the end of, you know, not going to make that dance. Come on. It's got a tragic ending. And so that one is way up there for me. But I would say probably the most, although think about it, is definitely going to be Guardians, because I still laugh the most when I watch that. That's the most fun ride for me, is Guardians Volume 1.
For me, that's why Thor Ragnarok is my most rewatchable. It's the one that, like, whenever I, like, just want to put something on, like, not, like, Thor Ragnarok is, like, the one I, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, perfect, go. Yeah. Because it's fun, it's got adventure, it has emotion, like, it has all of the things that make a great Marvel movie right in there.
The music, Zach?
The music's great. Yes.
That makes a point for Guardians 1, I'm just going to say. If you're going to call out the music.
No, absolutely
but
agree.
They have that in common, both of those.
Thor Ragnarok, you also get crossover fun, because you get Hulk in there, so you get that, like, multiple worlds kind of thing.
We get to meet Valkyrie.
Meet Valkyrie.
Love her character.
The one thing that you don't really get in there much, you don't really get romance.
No,
you guys know I'm a big softie.
No time for romance.
For me, that's why a lot of times. So no one is surprised by this, but Ant-Man and the Wasp is up there for me in terms of rewatch. So that's very personal, because I just love those characters. And seeing Wasp take form and seeing the duo, and that, because that's always been the thing for me with those characters, it's the duo. It's the couple as a team who's going to fight crime with a really cool power set. Together, like, fighting together is why
I
like
Zach.
That's why I love those characters, which is, like, why it becomes really hard to talk about the original ones, but Ant-Man and the Wasp, the movie, you get two pairs of Ant-Man and the Wasps, and that one, it's fun, it's funny. So for the comedy aspect for both of those makes them rewatchable. I find it harder to rewatch the more dramatic ones, because they're so good, you can just rewatch them. Like, I've rewatched Black Panther a ton of times, because it's fun, it's great to watch, and it has that, like, engaging drama. But you can't just, like, put it on as casually.
Right, you have to be in the mood and for that kind of movie and kind of emotionally ready for it. It sounds kind of weird, but I totally get it. Like, when you don't want to think or focus or, like, really hone in on a movie, if you just kind of want to casually sit back and enjoy something, I totally get that.
Yeah,
like, rewatching Infinity War before going to see Endgame was great, and I was like, oh yeah, there's all this stuff I like. It's not my go-to. Endgame, the length alone is a reason to not, you know, rewatch it so often, but I think that, those ones are a little too heavy. I really like the first Ant-Man, because as much as I like Ant-Man and the Wasp, it's all like, hey, remember this stuff? Here it is again. Hey, look, remember that? We're going to do it. Oh, now there's two of them. So I think that it was just too familiar, but I did like it. And when I rewatched it, because my wife actually never saw it in the theater, so when we rewatched it before Endgame, I was like, oh, I do really like this. But I still like the OG Ant-Man a little bit more.
See, I just think for me, it's that because you get a much stronger villain in Ant-Man and the Wasp. Right. So, like, because Ghost is, yes, she's a tragic villain where you want to side with her towards the end. But that was the biggest flaw in the original Ant-Man that what they did with Darren Cross, I think, fell short. In a big way, it fell into a big trap that like people have accused a lot of Marvel movies of having with villains that are dull and that's where I felt
more one dimensional.
Yellow Jacket for me was just like not enough for...
They didn't do enough with him, I agree.
Yeah, it was, like, kind of flat, kind of one note. Didn't have enough justification for why he turned. So that's why Ant-Man just, like, every time I watch it, I can't get away from that thought, right. So I can't rewatch
and
it.
And hey,
as much.
Ant-Man and the Wasp also has Lawrence Fishburne as Goliath, although we don't see him in action.
Yes.
You know, but we know that he's, you know, so like, it's like, where's that movie? I want to see that. I want to see de-aged Michael Douglas, Lawrence Fishburne, and Michelle Pfeiffer, you know, in action.
Oh, man. We can go back to that, the lab in and from Endgame,
right, exactly.
With that giant chrome helmet.
Yes.
You know what else gets up there on my list is the original Iron Man.
I was actually gonna, yep, that's, I agree. I can go back and rewatch that anytime. It was the first one.
It was, well, it's not just the first one, because a lot of times the first one in a series is like, yeah, thank you for setting up what was later great, but woo, like, think about how many pilots for TV shows. Like, I love Parks and Rec, but when I rewatch that show, a lot of times I just skip past season one, because
yeah.
It's just
the
like,
same with Friends.
It's a slog.
Totally yeah. Get it.
But Iron Man is just a great movie. It's again, it's got a lot of that humor, it's got that drama, it's got that romance angle, it's setting
got
up
Robert Downey Jr.
It's just fun. The graphics are good. Like, I think Obadiah Stane, while maybe not like the greatest villain of all time, is a solid like foe for him to go for.
Especially
Tony Stark
for
to go
his
off
first
against
movie, it made the most sense. Mm-hmm. I do like that movie, but it has one fundamental problem that is my fundamental problem, and I know it's not an MCU movie, with the first X-Men movie. They just didn't spend enough money on it. And there's times where I feel like, oh, just imagine if they, you know, kicked a little bit more money at this, what this sequence or that would look like. It's way more apparent in the original X-Men. But there are a few moments in Iron Man that I was like, oh, can't they get George Lucas to go back in and redo the effects like he did with Star Wars and some of this stuff? But the characters are all great, and setting him up as Iron Man and really building the whole world, it does do a great job. But it's a little tough.
Yeah, I do want to shout out to Jen James, who disagrees necessarily on Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And she says that Ant-Man and the Wasp is a second-tier MCU film. Hmm. And here's the thing. I don't necessarily disagree with that
right.
statement. Like, as far as, like, top first-tier movies, like, for me, the top-tier MCU movies are, like, Black Panther, Winter Soldier, and not in any order, but, like,
yeah.
Endgame, mm-hmm. Guardians 1, I think, actually makes it into there. But in terms of just rewatch, like, what am I going to pop in first? Like, what is the most, like, the one that I will probably have the most view counts if you could go back and look?
Yeah.
Ant-Man and the Wasp, for me, is more up there.
Well, one that we haven't thrown out yet, and it is an MCU movie, is Spider-Man Homecoming, because it is a Spider-Man movie that I love Spidey so much, and I think that they really nail him so well in that. But, you know, Michael Keaton is so great in that movie that I would just watch the scene of him driving them to the formal. I was just like, I could just watch that scene. I have just watched that scene because I was trying to remember something specific that he said in it once for something I was writing. And I think that might not be in my top three, but that's like, that's, I'll tell you, that's the most rewatchable Spider-Man movie that they've made for me. And I know that they're not all MCU movies, but still, I mean, that's the one that I think is the most fun to watch. Obviously, I would like to see Far From Home again, but I can't watch it at home right now.
Not so. Yet.
But soon.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's got to come home.
Yeah. There's like a sub-conversation happening in the chat. People are doing rewatchable versus one time was enough.
Ooh.
So Jenna James did a two-punch here. Guardians 1 is a rewatch. Once was enough, Guardians Volume 2. So
they beat me to my, you beat me to my transition, because
okay.
I wanted to go into what do you guys think is the least rewatchable movies. And not necessarily the ones that you dislike the most, but the ones that are like, you're like, I don't need to necessarily see that again or see it constantly. Like once every like 5 years is fine.
Oh, well, I don't know about every 5 years, but it's good. Endgame is really high up on that list.
Yeah.
To watch as an entire film, the 3 hour and 2 minutes is like, am I going to throw that on at 10:30 at night while I'm like trying to do stuff to have it in the background? I don't know about the rest of you, but I am not.
No, and for me, it's, I think probably a lot of people are already going to know this answer, but Captain Marvel, just for the simple fact that I am going to watch it one more time, just to see, just to sort of give it another
just sit
chance.
Sit back, enjoy it. It's so much
yeah,
fun.
But
I liked it more when I rewatched it as a like a home release.
Right. I am going to do it. But however, for that will probably be the only time that I rewatch it, just because I'm trying to give it another chance because I didn't enjoy it the first time. So for me, I think watching it again, I don't know if I would enjoy it. So I probably wouldn't if it wasn't literally just me trying to give it a chance. That and then Iron Man 3.
There's a lot of people are, you know, disparaging Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3 is
once and enough.
Iron Man 3 was good. I think it was good. It is lower down for me than some others, but I think it is a little bit like less. You don't need to rewatch it.
It was a bit of a meandering movie for me.
It's a little slower than the other ones. I would put Guardians Volume 2 down there on that down list. There. Like, I just...
But I'll tell you, I haven't seen it in a while, and I kind of, after watching Endgame, I kind of wanted to see it again. I just haven't had the time. I'm interested in seeing it at least one more time right now, because it's I saw it in the theater, and I haven't seen it since, so...
What I would really love to do is start from the beginning and rewatch them all.
Yes,
let's do that. Because every time we talk about these movies, I'm like, oh, man, it's been a while since I've seen that one. Yeah. Oh, it's been a long time since... Like, I want to just go back for a rewatch.
You mean what I've done twice in the last 2 years? Because I did it for prepping for Infinity War, and I did it prepping for Endgame.
Where do you get this time?
Watch the Ang Lee Hulk for the first time. You know, I'll go that far.
For the first time?
Yeah, I've never seen it.
You've never seen it? Oh. Seen it. We need to sit down and watch the Ang Lee Hulk.
No, I would like to, actually. I think that would actually be fun. Well, yeah, that's true. Just a quick question for the chat. Is there anything that you just have never seen? Maybe it's not even like you consciously decided it. It's like, oh, yeah, I got to get around to that one. Because... Look, it's a lot of movies. You know, there's something that you probably are like, oh, yeah, I probably should have. Like, my wife never saw Doctor Strange, even though I told her, like, it's good.
Oh, but Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange would be low on my list of rewatches.
Really?
Yeah. Because, like, it has some fun moments, but, like, the more you watch that movie, the more plot holes you find in it.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's the cassette. Again, it comes down to the villains. Like, Caecilius is a dull villain whose motivation is confusing or just non-existent. And Dormammu, that scene with Dormammu is amazing.
Yeah.
But, like, how he factors into, like, this whole, like, the plot of the movie is, like, not as strong as it needed to be. And when you watch it again, it is more apparent. And that's why it's like, maybe I'll just let the memories be there. The thing about Ang Lee's Hulk I wanted to say, you should check it out because look, it's not a good movie.
Right.
But Ang Lee tries stuff in it.
That's
like,
cool.
It is one of the ballsier movies in terms of, like, early comic book stuff where they're like, well, what if we really tried to translate a comic book to the screen? It's not always successful. It's not successful. But it's interesting. It's just a fascinating way if you look back, like, this is what people thought. Because he literally puts panels on the screen.
Oh, see, that sounds interesting. That's interesting. Yeah.
He tries to make it feel like you're watching a comic. And the way that, like, you got in Spider-Verse, it didn't work for this for the Hulk. And maybe because it was live action, it didn't really translate the same way. But I imagine it's similar to why musicals don't translate as well on film as they do in the theater.
Because nobody should be watching musicals ever.
How dare you?
Sorry.
One day I will have my MCU musical.
And you will watch it by yourself, and I will sit here and listen to you talk about it.
Oh, man, that could be a whole other topic. What would be the MCU's first musical?
Oh, God.
We're talking about it now. Chat, what do you want to see as the first musical in the MCU?
I remember...
And not, like, Guardians. I'm talking about sing-along musical.
No, I remember, like, 30 years ago, they were trying to get a Captain America musical. And, like, to the extent that if you have Marvel Comics from, I don't know what month, but it's for over a couple months, probably around 1989, 1990, there's a full-page ad for, like, you know... I don't know how you were supposed to go find out more about auditions and things, but I don't know whatever happened to it. But that means that
someone realized it was a terrible idea.
Well, somebody wrote a Captain America musical is what that means.
And then someone else realized it was a terrible idea.
Look, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark did exist.
Yeah, it sure did.
And I did pay for it.
Yeah, I think if I had still lived in New York at that point, I probably would have made myself go. But I would have only gone for the train wreck, you know?
But I'm talking about a musical on film. And I'm trying to think who would be the best. I think Deadpool. Deadpool the musical.
That might be the only one I've watched. Because the only musical that I've ever seen that I enjoyed is The Book of Mormon. And that's not even a movie. It's a play because it's hilarious.
Yeah.
So maybe if it was Deadpool, I'd be like,
I can see Deadpool figuring out a way to make it.
Red Dyson says Molecule Man the Musical.
I'm in.
You're just going for that alliteration. There's no other reason Molecule for that Man to exist. but yeah, I would. I 100% think you could do a Deadpool musical, and it would be like.
I wouldn't hate it, maybe.
Yeah, but I mean, I know that there was a real, there's a real Superman musical from like the 50s or 60s.
Oh,
like
dear
it's
Lord.
An actual, you know, it's an actual thing. I don't think anything else Marvel got closer to actually happening.
Gamer Girl asked if Marvel has their own version of the Music Meister, the DC character. Well, Marvel has Arcade. Who is like putting you into more like complicated battles and stuff, but he could easily shove you into a musical scenario.
All right.
I could see like where there's like it's American Idol and you have to sing your way out kind of thing. Like,
I mean, you could use Mojo for that as well.
That was the next thing I was saying.
And then also, why not visit a Spider-Verse where everyone sings when they talk?
There's literally reference to that in the comics.
Oh, it's great, because I want that.
There's like two Peter Parkers talking. And there's just random Peter Parkers. And this is one of my favorite moments in that book was just like, oh, did you see that one? It looks like the guy from Seabiscuit. I saw one over there who looked like the dude from Social Network.
That's funny.
That's nothing. I ran into one Spider-Man who wouldn't stop singing show tunes.
And by the way, just a point of order in terms of factual, just to put it on the record. It's a bird, it's a plane, it's Superman was indeed a Broadway show in 1966.
Wow.
Nice. So, you know, look, there's a precedent for it. I can't find anything about that Captain America musical, but by next week, I'm going to try and find one of those ads, and we'll put a screen grab up.
Xeno Hour, you might be a little on the nose here, but Dazzler.
Oh, well,
please,
that
yes.
But she's
sense.
Just singing in her life. I'm talking about somebody singing for no discernible reason.
Dazzler she could
would
do
be,
that.
Would be what they call a jukebox musical, where they take just like they'll just take a ton of songs from the 70s, and they'll like build a really flimsy show around it. But I would go see it because I love Dazzler that much. Look, you don't have to go with me, okay?
I'm not going with you.
No, I'm just saying.
I will go and throw popcorn at you to ruin your movie experience.
That's fine.
The whole time.
I'm just saying out there to Disney, if you want a Deadpool musical, I have some people ready to write that music, and I will just help them translate it into comic book insanity. thank you guys for joining. So. Closing out the conversation on the most rewatchable movies in the MCU, I think like between the chat and what we said here, it has to be Thor Ragnarok up there near Thor Ragnarok, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 are gotta be the two most rewatchable films. Like, I think the chat agrees with that. I think you guys and we agree. Thor Ragnarok and Guardians of the Galaxy. Undoubtedly at the top. I don't think we talked about it a lot, but Avengers has to be up in that conversation.
Yeah, the original Avengers. I saw in the chat, and I agree. That's definitely one of the ones for me. Yeah.
But like, I'm willing to accept that Ant-Man and the Wasp may not be up there for everybody. That's me personally, but it like Thor Ragnarok, Guardians of the Galaxy. It's just like they're fun, and that's really what comes down to you for something you want rewatchable anytime. It's got to be fun. It's got to be silly, and that's what those two have in spades. And we'll see what happens when we get Guardians 3 and Thor 4. Love and Thunder.
That might be a one-time only for me. We'll see.
Before we close out, I want to quickly jump over and we were talking a lot about movies, but we got to talk a little bit about TV.
Oh, yeah.
Let's jump over to TV time.
Movie news. We're talking TV time.
And if you want more Marvel TV than we have time for on today, make sure that you tune in on Sundays or just stay in your podcast feed app if you're listening to this for Marvel TV Weekly with Christian Zia. I pop in there when I can. Sundays are always a complicated time.
Right, and this Sunday, we're actually going to have, I believe, my entire co-panelists, all three of the other panelists from the Legion After Show, because we want to keep talking about the show, and Zia will be there with us, and we're going to spend an entire hour just talking about the Legion finale.
Spoiler free, I enjoyed the finale.
I did too.
It wasn't perfect. I think it did. It's one of those finales. TV finales are always difficult. This one was the logical finale. Like this all, it was clean. It made sense. It wasn't. It didn't blow me away. But like, if you go, if I went through and was like, well, yeah, that was how it should have happened. If that's what it is, it should have had. That's it ended how it was supposed to. It didn't necessarily blow me away.
No, okay. And I think there was something bigger that maybe some of us might have expected or hoped to see. But what it didn't do is the thing that I said on this show, on Marvel TV Weekly and the Legion After Show, that if they had done it, I would have been furious that I'd wasted 3 years of my life.
Yeah.
Where it's David sitting in a hospital and back in the pilot, and he imagined the whole thing. Because there were little clues along the way that they could have been doing that. And the fascination with Pink Floyd was one of them, by the way. So, which maybe you saw in that episode as well. But I thought it was a good ending. You know, it was it the greatest TV series finale? No, but it could have gone really wrong.
I mean,
and
look,
I think it was good.
We were talking about musicals. Legion was like almost a musical half the time. Like, it had a rap battle this year with Jermaine Clement.
That was my favorite part of the whole series. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I absolutely freaking love that.
Yeah, I didn't like the episode with the rap battle, but the rap battle was so great.
Oh my God.
I actually thought that episode was fascinating because it was like, it's just like the balls to do something, to take an entire episode and go into another world. And we're trying to keep it vague.
Yeah.
But one of the episodes this season, like, where they, like,
and it was at a point in the season when they only had 4 episodes left, and they took that little detour.
I know you weren't happy about that.
I wasn't happy about that because there were so few episodes left. I think there had been 3 or 4 more, I would have been able to enjoy it more. But to think back on it, I mean, some of it was very cool, and it did a good job setting up the series finale. Yeah. But
and
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and so that's Legion. Again, tune into Marvel TV Weekly for a huge, big discussion on that finale.
And that's going to be all the spoilers, so you have until Sunday to watch it if you haven't.
Yes. Real quick, I did want to mention Jeff Loeb was talking to a couple outlets this week about like Marvel TV's place in the market now that Marvel Studios, and reminder, those are two distinct entities.
Sure.
Are like Marvel Studios is doing TV series now with Disney Plus. And Jeff Loeb was like, reminded that the Marvel TV still has a ton of stuff coming up, like where you've got Hellstrom, Ghost Rider, all the animated stuff on Hulu. But he also dropped that he is going to be working, Marvel TV is going to be doing stuff for Disney Plus, which it was the first time anybody had heard about that. And he didn't give any specifics. He didn't say what's coming up. But what do you guys think of Marvel TV? Do you think we're going to get, this is the question, do you think we're going to get a more harmonious existence between the two sides of Marvel?
Honestly, yes. It seems like that's sort of what they're building towards anyway. Now that I mean, besides the fact that it's more money for them and they get all these other properties, but the fact that Disney now has Sony and it has all of those properties that it can use. I mean, it's really, they're just tightening their world more and more with the movie side. Why wouldn't they then do it with the TV side as well? And just
you mean
sort of
Fox, right?
Thank you.
Sorry,
yeah.
Just want to make sure
Sony?
That we're all in the
Thank you. Yes, Fox, not Sony.
There's only
three
entities that own everything.
Yeah, really. So I think that doing that on the TV side just makes sense to make it more of a coexistent world. And I think that for fans, too, it would be exciting. Like, oh my God, all of these things intersect in some way or another, or at least are mentioned or tied in. I would personally like that.
I think by announcing all the Disney Plus shows as part of Phase 4, you'll definitely see kind of like a synergy, a way that we haven't had. We can very well discard pretty much everything. Like, if they want to, they'll be like, yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. never happened. The Netflix shows never happened. They can definitely do that.
They could do a Star Wars Expanded Universe style drop, and I'm a big defender of that decision. It made a lot of sense. It's not quite as massive because they have been careful to separate themselves, but you could decide to take everything that's not Marvel Studios and exercise it from the canon. It's possible, but I hope they don't. I hope that they find a way. Maybe we can just, like, I know that there's been a lot of discussion. There's even been boycott talks this week, which we're not going to get into, but maybe they can just be like, hey, Ike, kick, and then let Jeff Loeb and Kevin Feige play in the same sandbox again.
That'd be nice.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. You guys, let us know. See if you... Do you disagree with us? Is there some movie that we didn't talk about today that is actually the most rewatchable Marvel movie of all time? Put it in the comments below or send it to us on Twitter. We want to know your thoughts. We want to know what you guys are looking forward to most. What are you gonna pop in as soon as you finish rewatching Endgame for the 80th time? What's next on your rewatch list? So send it to us. You can hit us on Twitter at Marvel News PTN. Be sure to follow the Popcorn Talk at the Popcorn Talk. And like us on YouTube, rate, subscribe on iTunes, wherever you happen to be listening to us, Podbean, wherever. Thank you for watching so much. I'm Zach Wilson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson. I would also love to invite you to check out my other weird comedy shipping podcast, Ships in the Night, where we just take random characters from different universes and write their love stories. This week we did Walter White and Dr. Fraser Crane, because we're weird. And baby, I hear that blew a calling. That's called Ships in the Night. Zia.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Zia_Land. That's XIA_Land. You can also check me out on another show that I do besides Marvel TV Weekly with Christian. It's Eric Nagel. That goes up, I believe, Friday mornings. You can find that pretty much iHeartRadio, iTunes, anywhere that you listen to your podcasts or shows.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ, and I'm going to take 1 minute to tie up. Yes, there was an ad that appeared in Marvel Comics in 1985 that put out a cattle call for a girl aged 10 to 14 to play Captain America's very special friend. You know, that character we all know from the comic books, who, of course, didn't exist. This musical had a $4 million budget, and Cap's enemy was going to be his own midlife crisis. So can we be glad that this never happened?
But it's clearly, I want it.
I want to read it.
Wow.
But in any case, so you can find out more about that.
Was her name Becky Barnes?
It doesn't say anything about who the character was. But yeah.
Who else could it be?
I don't know. That sounds terrible.
In any case, his girlfriend was a candidate for president. There's so many things.
Oh,
Google
my God.
This. We might have to do a whole show on it.
I would vote for Peggy Carter for president, for the record. Agreed. Christian, please plug yourself, and then we're going to get out of here.
Christian DMZ, Twitter and Instagram. And I have my own personal podcast, The Blackcast. You can find BLADTCAST.com.
All right, guys. This has been Marvel Movie News. Thank you so much to Ryan in the booth. Thank you to you for watching. And thank you for geeking out with us.
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.